You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 474 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm in Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Tristan will be impersonating Jerry Seinfeld when he was trying not to be funny on the double date with George during tonight's podcast because he's unhappy that our previous 25 to 30 minutes of recording.
It was gold, Jerry, gold!
I apparently forgot to hit record on. You know, I mean, really all the best podcast we ever recorded was the time we didn't record a podcast.
I totally agree. That was the one that was lost. I was just like, we are cooking right now. And then after you're like, yeah, it wasn't that good.
Then got to describe in an email what people wouldn't be able to listen to.
Well, we fought about Josh Naylor for some reason. We have to go through this whole Josh Naylor conversation again.
The Mariners have traded for Josh Naylor.
Ugh.
And it's a semi-emergency pod.
And Kevin, for some reason, hates this trade.
I don't hate this trade. I just, like, I know what people locally are going to think about this trade.
And what are they going to think?
That it is an enormous upgrade on this awful offense that the Mariners have that is holding back their historic pitching staff that ranks 24th in runs allowed per game on the road.
Look,
the issue isn't even Josh Naylor. The issue is just I am so tired of Mariners fans.
God, I'm so mad we missed the part of the deleted podcast where I complained about the Blue Angels. People complain about Blue Angels so much that I like the Blue Angels. So maybe instead you should be way pro Josh Naylor.
The point is I'm way pro the current Mariners.
Okay,
keep them all, even Donovan Solano.
You're telling me no holes
on offense. There's a lot of holes on the pitching staff. The pitching staff is a leaky bucket.
Damn. We circled all the way around to you saying no holes.
Only on offense.
Only on offense. Okay, but let's go through this again.
Staff and
we did this before.
Maybe the defense is Swiss cheese.
Josh Naylor is middle of the order for the Mariners, right? And that includes Canzone in a 35-game sample size.
Correct.
So, basically, when you look at it, WRC plus, OPS,
which
OPS
is strictly offensive
plus,
and does not account for positional value. And if you do those things, I mean, I haven't looked at what Josh Naylor's actual...
The positional value that they're getting from Luke Raley and Donovan Solano is even worse if you account for positional value. Like, if you're looking at them as
Luke
what...
Luke Raley has provided almost as much war this... I guess he's only 0.4. And Naylor is one whole war. I think it is plausible.
Raley provides value in other positions as well.
Yes, they can play both of them.
These two relief prospects.
One of them is a starter.
Which one?
I mean, Garcia was a starter until this season when the Mariners converted him to a reliever to try to sort of fast track into the major
league. The amount of times that a player gets moved to a reliever and all of a sudden they're like, and you're a starter again. It does not happen. When you get put into reliever bucket, you're in reliever bucket. It's a rare thing to move back to. Do you think Matt Brash is going to be starting a game anytime soon?
Yeah, because Matt Brash was really good at relieving.
And Brandon Garcia isn't? And you're mad about him being traded. He's a 25-year-old reliever. Like,
I'm not the one who ranked him. I don't know anything about Brandon Garcia until he turned up on the roster last week. He's just outside the Mariners' top 10 prospects. Do you think people are treating this as if they, you know, gave a couple of ham sandwiches to Arizona?
Those are the things. Let me just tell you, if you ask the Mariners, that's a list of top 10 prospects. If you ask the Mariners the 20 prospects that they care the most about, it's not going to be the same as the whatever that lit wherever.
But what matters to the Mariners isn't the relevant question, because that is
the only question.
No, because what matters is what other teams are willing to value them at in trade. That's what determines the alternative cost here.
The Diamondbacks, the real question is the Diamondbacks probably didn't have much of a market for Naylor. They were probably hoping to package him with a Eugenio Suarez to go get a little extra. People wanted
outside
Gino, but they didn't want Naylor.
Being outside the top 10 prospects for the team that has the deepest farm system in baseball isn't such a bad thing.
they could go find a pair of relievers like this almost anywhere. A 25-year-old reliever like Brandon Garcia is available in almost any place this offseason.
Then why is he ranked as high as he is among their prospects?
I don't know.
You're not the residue of knowledge about the Mariners minor leagues.
I'm the residue of knowledge of relievers, and they come and they go. Do they not? Every year we're like, it's been a pretty good bullpen this year, and it's always new people.
It has not been a good bullpen. It has been a very bad bullpen.
They have some good pieces.
The leverage arms have been good.
But it's always new players, and they just appear out of nowhere. That's
without
how
question.
Bullpens work. So if
other teams valued him that way, then the alternative cost.
The Mariners are an organization that are not willing to go all in on players unless they're going to get some long-term value from it. And that is the thing that Jerry DePoto is very, very good at.
Eugenio Suarez is reportedly at the top of their list.
We will see.
He's the best hitter who's going to get traded. So it makes sense that he's at the top of their list.
It really depends on what the asking price is. And I think that one they may push to the deadline. And I think they might have been like, look, cards on the table. Here's who we're willing to offer. Go talk to the Yankees. Go talk to the Cubs. Have these conversations. See what they're willing to offer. If they're not going to give you what you want from these trades, you know what our offer is. But I don't think the Mariners are going to go beyond that for Eugenio Suarez. And they're right not to.
I agree that they are right not to, and would tremendously fear that Eugenio Suarez, like the power surge that we have seen from this season, would immediately disappear as soon as he got back to T-Mobile Park.
So we went through all this exercise, but where do the Mariners rank offensively, just runs scored on the road?
Number 2 per game, behind only the Chicago Cubs. 24th in runs allowed per game on the road.
So this isn't necessarily a batting order that needs extra players, but if you can go find an upgrade, because this does benefit them both at T-Mobile Park and not at T-Mobile Park, and there's almost no doubt in my mind that batting-wise, Josh Naylor is an upgrade on Solano and Luke Rayleigh. And the other piece is you're getting extra major league bats. And that's what this is also. Like, there were a few moments that the Mariners were looking at, you know, like pinch hitters or whatever. There was a game a few weeks ago that they should have pinch hit Mitch Garver and they didn't. It was kind of baffling. But they just still are missing one or two extra bats. Even though those numbers are true of how many runs they're scoring, they still do need a little bit of help offensively.
Yeah.
Do you not agree with that?
I mean, you can always get better.
Every team needs great relief. Every team needs everything, right? But there's never a team who's like, we're set. We don't need another good bat who has a little bit of pop.
FanGraphs WAR does like Naylor a little bit better than Baseball Reference WAR. They've had an almost 3 WAR in a season, and
that's great.
Over two, the last 5 combined over the previous 2 seasons.
The defense also, like, he's not a good defender, but it's first base. It is the least important position. If you're keeping Ben Williamson in the lineup, you're kind of trading those two things. And right now, what they're getting is not great defense at first base and also not great hitting at first base. So when you talk about it positional value-wise, like, they are punting on first base right now.
I don't know if I'd go that far. Luke Rayleigh has not hit that well this season. If you look at his previous 2 seasons before this, basically identical in terms of WAR to Naylor.
But they still have Luke Rayleigh. They're going to find at-bats for Luke Rayleigh.
Yes.
It's probably more of a Solano question than it is a Luke Rayleigh question.
And I don't think that Solano is going to be on the roster past the trade deadline, I would say, at this point. I mean, certainly at some point you're thinking that they have to make room for Victor Robles on the roster again. And, you know, when you have that additional right-handed bat to go with Canzone and Rayleigh and Naylor as left-handers, that's, I think, you know, if it's not before then, at that point, Solano is not around anymore. You know, especially because he didn't provide any defensive versatility at all.
I think this could be it, though. I think the Mariners could be done. And like I said, they probably have a deal on the table for Gino. And it's like,
at least 2 relievers.
There might be, but I don't think they're going to be big trades.
No.
I think this could be it as far as upgrading the batting order.
That would be fine by me. I do think third base.
They're second in the league and runs scored on the road. Like, that's not an advanced stat, but it's still nice. And if you can go out and if you're in that position already and you find a hitter who's fifth in your lineup, I'm like, top to bottom, when you look at it, it's, you know, there's Cole Young and there's Ben Williamson at the bottom, and everybody else can kind of do everything. Everybody else has the ability to hit the ball out of the park, the ability to hit for power, and the ability to get on base. And it's like, it's a pretty deep lineup all of a sudden, what you're talking about. If you have Naylor six in that range, you know, similar to where Polanco is kind of like floated around and what they've been getting from Canzone lately, I don't think that they didn't need a ton, but they just got a slight upgrade. And that's what this roster needed.
The Mariners are fifth in WRC plus as a team.
As a team. That's great.
When do you think they're going to be catching the Astros now? When is your timetable for that at this point?
Picked up a game today.
That's positive.
I told you, by the time the children go back to school. Do you think I'm backing down from this hot take?
You know, the thing that's really striking looking at the Mariners against the other teams that are in the playoff mix in the AL is,
what is
boy,
that?
Their run differential is not nearly as good as any of them. The three teams directly behind them in the wild card race, Boston, Texas. Texas is like shockingly good. In Tampa Bay, all dramatically better in terms of run differential. The only team they're even close to is the team with the best record in the AL, Toronto.
They're not even that close to Toronto. But it is funny that they could be fifth. It's just like the Mariners' whole team is kind of in the upside down this year, where it's largely pitching that we're concerned with. A little bit of defense. I don't know where they rank defensively, right?
It's not good. Not great.
So those two pieces, they're like the exact opposite of what we expected the Mariners to be.
I mean, I think we did expect the Mariners to be better offensively than people thought. They're 23rd in defensive runs, whatever it is, according to FanGraphs. So that is a factor in why the, you know, runs allowed is as high as it is. But
the Rangers have given up 100 less runs than the Mariners.
The Texas Rangers?
Yeah.
Texas? If you look at the breakup, their pitching F war, they're 16th amongst in starters, 25th in relievers. And the starters, obviously, you know, the Emerson Hancock starts are a considerable factor in that, and just the general run of health that they've had. I do feel like going forward, the Mariners probably have, you know, assuming reasonable health, a top 10 rotation in baseball. So, you know, how much you can upgrade on that is uncertain. But the bullpen, I think there's plenty of room to add around, you know, the Spire, Brash, Munoz combination that you do feel quite good about.
They've also, none of these teams are terrible that they have coming up, but you look at it and it's four games with the Angels. Could be a four-game sweep. I wouldn't be shocked. The three with the A's, four again with Texas, who sneaky good Texas, but they're all at home. Then the White Sox and the Rays, and even at Baltimore, right, in mid-August. Like
the Rays, again, to be noted, to like the Rangers, dramatically better than the Mariners in terms of run differential. Like night and day better.
This is a time period where, I mean, look, Milwaukee might be the best team they play all summer or until they play the Dodgers at the end of the season.
They've been good against good teams other than the Yankees. Milwaukee and Detroit, awesome. Top notch.
I think a little bit of that is why the playoff odds are so confident in the Mariners, despite, because the playoff odds are aware of that run differential, and usually run differential is the most predictive thing. But what, I don't know if, how their schedule ranks for the rest of the season.
It's very easy, yes.
So they're aware of that. And that means that the Mariners have played a little bit of a front-loaded schedule when you're talking about these things. Because when you're talking about run differential, it's counting stat. It's not an advanced stat.
It's a more
predictive one. But the playoff odds are baking all of that stuff in right now.
Let's see. Their remaining strength of schedule, 0.494 against, according to FanGraphs. The AL Central teams do have slightly easier schedules than the Yankees, but they have the easiest in the AL West and dramatically easier than the AL East teams that are in the wildcard race.
Who also, I mean, the entire AL East is good, and they're going to have to play each other.
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah, a bunch of times. So
the AL Central is bad, but none of those teams is good enough probably to take advantage of it. I mean, the Guardians are at 500 right now.
the other pieces, they just got better today.
A little.
Maybe it is not like you're complaining about the hypothetical Mariners fans who you're mad because you think that Mariners fans are going to be too happy about the Josh Naylor trade.
Correct.
It's a complicated perspective that you have. You have to admit that at the very least.
When have my perspectives not been complicated?
Look, nothing was complicated about how ESPN graded this trade as well.
A B plus, the best possible grade, right? The perfect grade.
To me, when you grade something a B plus, you know, when you put it in the machine and it spits out the B pluses, that is a good trade, in your opinion.
Has anyone asked ChatGPT what it means when I grade a trade at B plus? That'd be interesting to know what they think. Yes. I think
that some of us are personally against AI. It's destroying the environment. But, you know, go ask ChatGPT what it says about Kevin Pelton's trade grades. Nah, I'm just joking. It's okay.
Was that your Blue Angels take?
Nah, it doesn't matter.
My ESPN colleagues, Bradford Doolittle and David Schoenfield, do the trade grades. And David is a Mariners fan, so he may be a little Mariners pilled on this one, too. There was a discussion on the Discord.
So you think that he's Mariners pilled? I mean, you're not a fan of anybody, but like in the NBA, you're somehow a fan of ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton.
You know, as I think about it, the Damian Lillard grade may have been a little Blazers pilled.
For the signing?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about that. But it was the exact right. I was nervous, to be honest. Like, if the Mariners would have traded
the best prospect, thing you can say about this trade is that my other ESPN colleague, Jeff Passan, gave it, that's the whole trade, which harkened back to a running joke about the Chicago Bulls and how they never get draft picks in trades, which Nate Duncan, third Pelton brother Nate Duncan, recently posted. That's it. That's the whole trade. The whole should be the title of the Bulls documentary about this era. Wow,
I was nervous. I was nervous, though. Like, if I got a notification about the Geno trade, I was just like, I don't want to feel the way that I would have felt about it. Because for prospects, you're talking about how many years do you have team control? 7?
I think so, yeah.
7 years of sweet, sweet team control for somebody. That's a long runway to figure it out for a prospect, right?
It's tough because Geno has been so awesome this season.
It's not that and I don't love Geno, but I'm just like, if we were to see Harry Ford going, look, I don't even think Harry Ford's probably going to be a star, but like value-wise, I can almost guarantee you that Harry Ford will in that time period of team control have a lot more value than Geno's going to have in the next 40 games.
And that can be worth it if it's the difference between, you know, winning a pennant and not. You know,
I actually still think this. I think this Mariners team has a chance to win the World Series.
It's more my certainly they have a chance to win.
But I don't think they are one Eugenio Suarez away, positive or negative.
Fangraphs has it. Wow, Fangraphs swinging wildly. They're back up to even with the Astros at 7.4%.
There it is. I'm telling you, were like, when do the Mariners overtake the Astros? Ask Fangraphs when the Mariners overtake the Astros.
To be clear, Fangraphs still has them with a 1-in-4 chance of winning the division. So it's optimistic, but it's not that optimistic. It's more that it thinks the projection system finds the Mariners to be a better underlying team heading into the playoffs.
That is also basically like what I was saying about this team is a little bit upside down. And if the offense is going to be the where they're going to be, we probably should be expecting some regression from the offense overall for the rest of the season. And that's why you need a Josh Naylor to combat that a little bit, like from all parties. I still think, like, seeing the Julio Jack earlier, every time Julio does good, it's just like, yes. Yes, Julio. So there's nobody I'm cheering for
more. This is
going
to be the run.
Than Julio getting hot. And same with Randy. When Randy came up and hit that two-run homer to basically to almost blow the game open earlier today, it was just like, keep going. Like, this is the Randy Rosarena that we wanted to have here. So I'm feeling great about the position that the Mariners are in. Aside from, it was a difficult series with the Brewers, and I think there's a little bit of underlying stuff with the Mariners that's not necessarily skill-wise that is a teensy bit of an issue with them, but we'll talk more about that later.
Let's see. There was something else I wanted to ask you about with the Mariners, but I have lost.
We're still doing hot takes, right?
We are still doing hot takes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a discussion in the Discord about why the Pelton cast is the least reactionary Mariners pod out there, where it was theorized that it's because of the fact that we were checked out for the down years.
The least reactionary Mariners podcast. I feel like we're the least reactionary everything out there.
Now that's a very fair argument. My stylings are not known to be reactionary.
It's like reactionary for fun, but also none of it matters that much.
I mean, I think we're less consumed with the idea that the Mariners are perpetually doomed because of the fact that, like, in our Mariners fandom, you know, pretty good run starting when we jumped on board in 93. Not a bad.
Yeah, I've only been there for the good years.
Next 8 years. You came back a little earlier than me. But then,
they were pretty good years when they came. Hey, look, rule changes. Those teams were like in or near the playoffs.
Fair. I didn't tune back in until the Mitch Haniger game at the end of the 2021 season. Solid 54% winning percentage ever since. Right there. On the mark.
That is hilarious that the idea that in our minds the Mariners are just like a pretty good team forever.
Basically,
if you only pay attention when the team is good.
The most exciting center fielder, the most exciting center fielder is the most exciting player in baseball at almost every point I've followed the team. You know, we did have to deal with the loss of multiple inner circle Hall of Famers in a 4-year span or whatever, a 3-year span, I guess it was.
We didn't really care that much.
Yeah. Like, you never had to worry about the idea of, like, wow, Ichiro wasting his entire career with the Mariners, you know, never advancing to the playoffs after his rookie season.
The thing, I am just very much, I'm going to be optimistic about things.
This is...
You don't agree with that?
I mean, you are, yes.
I can't believe we lost the miles per hour at the University of Washington. It's going to be 2 line. So good.
Okay, you're right. That was gold. I agree. God. Should we do the toast?
Yeah, let's do the toast.
Because that does keep us on the same topic. This weekend is Hall of Fame weekend.
Hello.
For Major League Baseball, featuring Ichiro, with the ceremony televised on MLB Network beginning Sunday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific. I assume you'll be at a baseball game, actually.
I've got baseball to watch. Sorry, I can't watch somebody talking about having played baseball adequately decades ago. I've got current baseball to watch.
With a high degree of adequacy. I know what adequate means. Ichiro. You know one of the interesting things? Like, we know so many, everything gets out nowadays. The fact that we still don't know who the one person was that didn't vote Ichiro for the Hall of Fame is kind of amazing to me. All right.
There was no one person who voted.
What do you mean?
3 minutes were missing from the tape.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Because not everything is known. Fair point. Congrats to Skylar Diggins.
I think everything is known.
Well, that part is known, yes. Not everything is known. I don't think everything is known. I don't agree. Congrats to Skylar Diggins, who recorded the first triple-double in WNBA All-Star Game history, including an All-Star record 15 assists as part of Team Collier's 151-131 win over Team Clark on Saturday. Neko Gumeke had 16 points on 7-of-8 shooting as a starter for the victorious Team Collier, while Gabby Williams, the Lone Storm player on Team Clark, made 4 three-pointers off the bench, scoring 16 points and handing out 5 assists. And in a story that really brings all of the Pelton cast together, congrats to longtime Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner, announced Wednesday as a new minority investor in the Storm.
Okay, I circled this from every angle. Not even joking.
Looking for a take? Thought,
no. Not looking for a take. I circled it from every angle, just being like, there's something about the minority ownership piece, the famous minority ownership thing that annoys me. And
the Storm... did not go looking for, they have a number of minority investors who have purchased. We'll talk about the context of that in a second. Bobby Wagner is the only one they have made public. but that may also be, you know, his interest in doing so. It was announced immediately before his weekly press conference as part of Washington Commanders training camp, and then he got to tell reporters and talk about it with them.
Okay, so like I said, I looked at it from every angle. There are sometimes, right, like Macklemore's like a part owner, I think still, of the Sounders and the Kraken, despite whether they are happy about that or not. Again, another thing that we talked about.
Hard to get someone out of your ownership group.
Yes. But, so I circled it from every angle, and I was like, it never feels right to me. But then I thought about it. And I'd rather a minority owner be Bobby Wagner than some fucking rich white guy, right? And I was like, hell yes to this, because most of the minority owners are a lot worse than Bobby Wagner.
Most of everyone is a lot worse than Bobby Wagner. I would say that the Storms, not knowing anything, because this is not public and I've asked about it, not knowing anything about the rest of the investor group, besides the
it's not exactly specific to the Storm, but this is like professional sports ownership.
Yes. Yes. So the Storm sold minority shares prior to the construction of the Storm Center for Basketball Performance to help fund that at a $151 million valuation, which at the time was a record for a women's pro sports team that they touted. Sportico reported in June that some of those shares had been resold this year at a $325 million valuation, with Wagner buying in as part of that group. So the people who resold those shares that they bought, I can't pin down exactly what the timetable was on when those were sold, but within the last 3 years, they already doubled their investment. That's how quickly the WNBA is growing right now.
I would say yes, the WNBA, but also every professional sports franchise.
Yes.
The numbers might, like the percentage wise is not going to be as great of an increase,
right?
But meanwhile, Adam Silver just can't find a group of people who want to add another team to the NBA.
I mean, that's part of the problem, I think.
Is that if they add a team, then all of a sudden you can't hold the city hostage for team values other places?
No, that's irrelevant. That part of it is... Seattle fans think that's a thing, and it is not a thing, because there's always another city out there. There's always a Shelbyville that's going to put a monorail in. What it is... Part of the reason the valuations have gone up so much is because you're making so much money from the national TV deals. And if you split that, your franchise is no longer worth as much money. So
the number never goes down. The number is always a straight lineup.
The number will go down, and it has to be a bubble. It can't not be a bubble. Things are not going, like, revenue is not going to continue to increase infinitely. There's just only so many ways you can make money. And one of those local TV deals is going the wrong direction.
I mean, I'm a person who always wants everything to crash and burn. So always an optimist, always wants everything to crash and burn. It's complicated, but I would love for that to be the case. But also, I just know you're wrong. So, I mean, you could say it's words. I hear the words you're saying, and I know that you are incorrect.
I mean, eventually they're just going to run out of money in the world. There's not that much money in the world.
All wealth in the world is going to professional sports franchises. There's more money.
Just there's wait. Not.
There is always,
I mean, maybe
more
there will
money.
Be
there's
in
like
the technocrat the future.
The amount of foreign money that there is also like the WNBA hasn't even tapped into that in the same way. The money is endless.
I'm not worried
and
about
the
valuations
WNBA's
are valuation. Endless. There's just like not 30 different people who are going to have the money eventually. There'll be like six.
There's going to be exactly 30 people who are going to have the money.
Okay. Because the teams themselves will be the money.
How many businesses are there now? Three?
That's speaking to my point. All right. Congrats to Obed Vargas, who entered in the 62nd minute and finished the game as the MLS All-Stars beat Liga MX All-Stars 3-1 on Wednesday. Tresa Uno. At age 19, I had missed that Obed Vargas made the All-Star game. I was kind of surprised when he popped up.
I didn't even know he was still on the team.
He's still on the team. Has not facilitated a transfer just yet. We discussed a few weeks ago the Sander at Heart report that he is working on an extension with the Sounders. Not that that would necessarily preclude a transfer down the road. Do you want to talk about the Damian Lillard news now?
Is this the time?
It could be our NBA Seattle update, sponsored by our friends at Poliachi Pizza, which in this case is a Portland update. But also sort of a Seattle update, because Damian Lillard did deliver the best moment in Seattle men's professional basketball in the last 17 years. And then somehow it led to the Thunder winning a championship.
I was so hyped about seeing Dame coming home. It's one of those moments where Dame is my favorite basketball player, like post-Sonics. Dame was my favorite basketball player. And I like the Blazers after that. Obviously, you got Toumani Kamara, who has excited about other players. But like, I literally said like 2 weeks ago to the children, I was just like, I'm kind of off the Blazers right now. Like, it's fine. Cheer for them a little bit. And then they re-signed Damian Lillard. And I was like, we are back on, baby. The Blazers are back on the menu right now. Dame is just, he's the most fun basketball player. I like him as a person. I like him as a player. I like having Dame Lillard there being part of the team and the structure. I like how much Portland likes him. It's so funny saying that, because in the deleted podcast, I talked about how mad I was that the Kingsmen, Louie, were from Portland as an offense to the city of Seattle. Yet somehow, Dame Lillard...
I believe the theme of this week's podcast is it's complicated.
It's complicated. Dame Mullen transcends all of that, though, right?
Yeah, without question.
He's the spiritual heir to Gary Payton. Even though he plays very differently to Gary Payton, Dame Lillard is the spiritual heir to, it's like Gary Payton, Marshawn Lynch, Dame Lillard, right? Yeah.
That's a pretty good grouping.
Those are the pillars. All have ties. I mean, Dame doesn't even, all have ties to the Northwest, I'll say. Obviously, GP played college ball in Portland as well, but like,
not in Portland, in Oregon.
In Portland-ish. He played in the right college in the state, at the very least. It's not fucking Luke Ridnour over here, but always hated him. Bad basketball player. But
if you'd have even recruited him. No, I'm sure just, they did.
No jump shot.
The college line, Luke Ridnour is really good.
Having Dame back just as the energy in the building, I think, is huge. And people are talking about like the money, and I'm like, I don't care about the money. It doesn't matter to me at all, right? Also, where else are the Blazers going to spend it?
I think the money argument is kind of dumb, frankly, or at least overplayed, because you know there were some other things they could have done with the $14 million this year, perhaps via trade. You know, maybe you're going to get some second round picks at the deadline. Sure, fine. The point of having those second round picks is to be better in the future. You know, it's going to make you better in the future having Damian Lillard making $13.3 million in 2026-27. Like, obviously,
so the deal is structured where it's a ton of money year one and then less per year,
but it goes high, low, high is the way it's structured. His low
and is that a player option for year three or a team option?
Player option for year three. I mean, it's an amazing deal for Damian Lillard, who gets paid for this season.
He's picking up that player option.
I mean, I think he's hoping to make more than that after a healthy season. He gets to double dip this season. He got a no trade clause, or he gets to double dip the next two seasons, gets paid to rehab this season, no trade clause, and then the player option in 2027-28. It's A-plus work. Is a contract from Damian Lillard's standpoint, but I still think it can be a win for the Blazers as well. So they structured it that way because there is a possibility, depending on what happens with Shaedon Sharpe and some other things, that they could have cap space next summer.
Okay, but great.
The other thing about it is I've been rereading Return of the King by friends of the pod, Brian Windhorst and Dave McMiniman.
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes, about LeBron James going back to Cleveland. And there are definitely like some parallels in like, all right, well, I'll go away for a couple of years. You'll get all this stuff, rebuild the roster, then I'll ride back in. And I have heard this point made that like, I think this was on the Hoop Collective as well, that like basically this is the roster that Damian Lillard hoped he would have when during his prime years in Portland with guys like Kamara and Avdija. And now he gets to play with them, obviously, at a different stage of his career.
So. The parallels between him and LeBron are like you're squinting real hard for. I mean, how
is
it
not the same as
be?
LeBron doing it in the prime of his career? Well,
the prime of his
MVP
career
over.
Not coming off a full season long injury. I don't know if I
Dame
even
didn't
expect...
Dame didn't Dame... win two championships in Milwaukee, as it turns out.
I mean, LeBron didn't the first. Oh, you're saying in between?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't. How good was Dame in Milwaukee? Even to begin with,
he was like a top 20 to 25 player last season.
Oh, that's honestly, that's way better than I thought he was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a credible all-star pick.
For me, when Dame Lillard went to Milwaukee, he may as well have been on fucking Mars.
Famously not on TV, the Milwaukee Bucks.
But that's not even necessarily it that they're not on TV. It's just like, I'm not going to pay attention to what's going on for the Bucks. They didn't really have a deep playoff run either season, right? No. And he was just kind of gone. Like, the Bucks aren't a particularly fun like, Giannis is a very good player, but they're really not a very fun team to watch. And there's nothing that, interesting about the Bucks in any way, and they're in Milwaukee. So, like, Dean was just, he was off in space for a couple of years, and now he's back home.
We love the Milwaukee listener, if you are, in fact.
This is not even a complaint. No, this, I think, I've never been to Milwaukee, but I have heard that Milwaukee is an amazing city. But I'm talking about basketball-wise.
I enjoyed the 5 hours I spent there.
There are plenty, Atlanta's an amazing city, but I don't care about the Hawks.
Well, that's a pretty big difference. The Bucks were a contending, they did win the NBA Cup, you'll recall, last year.
I won't recall.
Oh no. Dave got some hardware.
He
got
same. I think Washington's an amazing city. I kind of wanted Washington to have Cooper flag, but
yeah. All right. Well, anyways, no, I'm very excited for Dave.
I'm hyped about it. He may be a good player again in 2 years.
Yeah.
This is not a like, okay, because I was under the impression this was just like Griffey coming home.
I think
you know
people
what I mean?
Are too far down on Dame's process. Look, this is a very serious injury. He's late in his career. He was already likely to decline due to injury. You know,
doesn't he have the kind of game that's going to age pretty well, though?
If it kind of depends what his willingness is to reduce his role. But yeah, I mean, he has the ability to play off the ball with his shooting.
This is the argument that I made to you. If you recall playoffs, whatever, 2022 or something. Dame is a distributor first, in my opinion. He loves to pass.
I don't think
they would swarm him, he was very... There were times where I was like, dog, you gotta shoot!
He's perfectly unselfish. I just don't think he's a distributor first.
I think he is more of a distributor than he gets credit for.
I think, you know, he came here in part because... Came back in part, along with the family.
And by here, you mean Portland, Oregon.
The Pacific Northwest. But I think he came back in part because he was excited to play with some of these young guys, not necessarily to
push them out of the way. They were a fun team. That's where, honestly, I mean, that's how I felt this year, where it's like, damn, I actually like this Blazers team. They're a fun team to watch. I can see them fuzzily running across the screen. And
we got to get that figured out this season. I don't know who I have to talk to, but we got to get that figured out.
I don't think we're going to do anything about it. Not sure anybody cares. We'll see if the 134 people, have any clout to get the Blazers into HD in Seattle, Washington, but my gut tells me no. Anyway.
Do you think Jody Young found a way to watch them in HD when she wasn't at the games?
I bet she wasn't even watching.
No, I'm sure she was watching.
Maybe. I guess she really cares about basketball, right?
She's by all accounts more in on the Seahawks than the Blazers. Paul was more invested in basketball than football.
But the roster was like, damn, I just wish they also had Dame, you know? Or it's like, these young guys are fun.
I don't know, it was specifically
also...
that. Did you pay any attention to the Han Sen Yang thing? We didn't talk about that last week, did we?
I think we might have for a second. I think we already talked about this.
Young Han Sen, I guess, to correct myself there. He's fun. I didn't get a chance to see him at all in Vegas, but when I did finally watch a game of his when I was back home in Seattle last week. All right, with that, it is time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Well, it's finally happening this weekend. And I hope it's the last weekend ever that we have to talk about the most overrated player in Mariners history. A player who became a fan favorite purely because of longevity, not much on play. He had two fine seasons, and in one of which he got an accolade. But beyond that, it was mostly just some singles and mediocrity. And since then, we've been saddled with him in our lives nonstop for more than 20 years, most of all this past year. And if this franchise would get its head out of its ass and stop celebrating its playoff appearances so much, we wouldn't have to think about him at all. So this weekend, I hope they make the right decision and we can move on from, you know it, Dan Wilson.
Oh, no.
As I watched Mariners reliever Carlos Vargas hit a pair of Astros batters on Saturday and tensions flare between the two rivals, I was excited to see Dan barking back at Stros manager Joe Espada until the camera panned over. And turned out the actual dog in the Mariners dugout is the man who should be manager of the Mariners, a 38-year-old coaching phenom who actually knows how to protect his players and how to cut off his shirts and has helped develop the best staff in baseball last year. Pete goddamn Woodworth, a real coach. Dan came in a little with a little flair last year, but over time, that is all gone. He, for the most part, manages things the way anyone else would. I'd say he manages like an AI manager, but that would be unfair to the software. Meanwhile, don't look this up because I know I didn't, but the Mariners lead the league in pitches outside of the zone called strikes against them. And Dan leads the league in doing absolutely fucking nothing about it. Not even a chirp. He acts like his whole job is telling the umpires to hold play after they've been caught stealing and then eventually giving the signal to keep going. It's shocking to me that someone who played the majority of their career under Lou Piniella could possibly end up this docile in the dugout. And the team takes after their manager as well. When I saw them again on Wednesday go down a few runs to the Brewers in an air-filled fourth inning, I turned off the game then. Because I saw it in their eyes that they wanted nothing to do with the dogfight that the Brewers bring every single day. So I don't give a damn about playoff odds and World Series odds from Baseball Reference or Fangraphs or how many Josh Naylors this team trades for until Dan is gone or he ends up with a little more influence from the late, great John Marzano. And this team gets more fight in them. They're not going to win shit. And that's true. That's an actual take right there.
I know that's an actual take. I do.
God, I hate Dan Wilson.
Do appreciate the craft there at the beginning. The misdirect. I was trying. I mean, I thought Don
Wilson, knew I wasn't talking about Ichiro. Come on.
Obviously, I knew you were not talking about Ichiro. I was like, who could have been on the roster for
13 WAR for his career? 13 WAR. They made this man manager because he's white and a catcher. That's all it takes. That's it. Mike Cameron should be the manager of the Mariners. Done.
Let's see what hired. Mike Cameron team would look like.
He has less WAR than Eric Hansen. Make him the manager.
Who knows what Eric Hansen's up to these? Cammy is part of the organization, right?
I mean, he's on a broadcast occasionally. Maybe he is.
I think he's like a, you know, special assistant or something at this point.
Because the Mariners have to honor every player that ever played for them.
Yeah, special assignment coach for the Mariners, primarily focusing on player development.
There we go.
Yeah. Unclear what Eric Hansen
from afar, from his house. If he's watching a game and has a tip, he'll text it. Don't worry. That's enough to be manager. Wow. Literally, they just called him up off the street. They were like, fans kind of seem to like you. I think you were maybe kind of good looking in the 90s.
This is the best after retiring baseball I've ever seen on Wikipedia. For Eric Hansen, he took on a career of competitive amateur golf, which does seem somewhat contradictory, and currently holds the course record at Seattle's Jackson Park Golf Course.
That is a competitor right there. Eric Hansen's looking for competition any place he could find it. Way more career WAR than Dan Wilson.
As you know, I think that the idea that, you know, complaining about calls is helpful is wildly overrated. That it, in fact, is people getting confused about regression to the mean, as most things in the world are.
The only part about getting confused about regression to the mean was when Dan Wilson was hired and the team got slightly better. Scott Servais was a great manager.
I agree that Scott Servais was definitely a better manager than Dan Wilson.
Scott Servais did nothing wrong. He's the only thing that can hold this team back. The roster is better this year than it was last year.
Yeah, but for some reason he wasn't. I mean, I do think Edgar may have helped to some degree in Kevin Seitzer in terms of the hitting. I do think that's plausible. I don't know that Scott Servais would have been totally opposed to bringing them in. So what happens is, like, there are bad calls, and then someone complains, and then the calls even out, because that's what happens with regression to the mean, and people attribute it to the complaining rather than to the regression to the mean. This is something that, you know, Daniel Kahneman observed decades ago, and it's a very influential bit of research in both psychology, economics, in psychology, economics, and statistics in general. I also think that, like, people want the manager or the coach to be as upset as they are, and I don't generally think that's that productive. You want the coach to be a stable force, I think. I mean, obviously there is a degree of complaining you want them to do to keep the players from doing it. I don't think that that's an issue with the Mariners, that they're especially distracted by umpiring as a team.
The point that you're missing here is, sorry, Pete Woodward's 36, not even 38.
Wow.
Make him the manager. But the point that you're
making
missing,
pitching coach is the manager. That always works, right?
Just a random guy off the street?
I didn't say that was the only alternative.
I played ball back in the day, so, you know, I think he knows his stuff. The point that you're missing here is, yes, like, people want the manager to be as angry as they are. Baseball is supposed to be fun. And when people are messing with you, with your team, and calling things wrong, it is more fun to have your manager stand up for you. Lou Piniella was a phenomenal manager, was he not?
Probably.
I mean, as much as you could judge a manager, completely changed the culture of the Mariners, right?
Yeah.
And obviously they had the talent. Lou was willing to go out there and defend his players in a way that it's shocking that Dan learned nothing from this.
Exactly the same, except that he didn't, you know, kick dirt on
Lou. If Lou Piniella was exactly the same and he didn't do that, Lou Piniella is nothing today. Lou Piniella just doesn't matter. He's just a guy.
He doesn't even have Shag commercials.
Yeah. I'm not even joking. Lou Piniella, it is like part of who he is. It's part
I
of who that Mariners
team is. It's a memorable
was.
Thing.
He couldn't even bark back just to let Pete Woodworth do it. Come on, dude. The cutoff sleeves, Pete Woodworth, that he walked out to the mound on the game that I was at on Tuesday. The cutoff sleeve, I was just like, damn, Pete Woodworth, so much aura.
I think people used to get frustrated that Lorenzo Romar didn't. He got his share of technicals, though. He definitely
I think Loro got a little worked up.
He got worked up. I just, like, one of the things that annoys me is the
Lute Olson was the one, though, dude. Lute Olson knew how to work referees. Lute Olson would get, and also probably one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time.
Well, it's also easier to work referees if you have the credibility of Lute Olson. You know, I don't think if Ken Bone would have tried the same strategy, it would have worked equally well.
I'd like to see him try.
I don't know. I just dislike the idea that, like, people who are visibly angry are therefore more competitive or want it more than
Dan Wilson visibly does not care at all. I just like
something to
not
be
even
said
though
for
like
a degree of stoicism from your coach or manager.
You know what? You would say that.
I
and
would.
Your podcast host.
Oh, I've been angry on this podcast. I've been angry on this podcast.
Since this is not going to come up later, randomly took the children to the game on Tuesday. In celebrating a classic American summer as something that we have to do, right? As an act of defiance, this classic American summer. And to me, just randomly going to a game, being like, Mizorowski versus Logan Gilbert, we've got to go. And to see Logan Gilbert absolutely dominate that performance. Jacob Mizorowski's awesome, mind you, but he's on an extreme pitch count and mowed down Mariners hitters. It's also the thing that I was thinking about, which is like prospect rankings. And he was always good. Like, Jacob Mizorowski was not bad at any point, but he was also an all-star after 6 appearances. And part of that was the all-star game is supposed to be fun, and he's fun because of how hard he throws, but also a dominating pitcher. And when I was looking at prospect rankings, and I was like, he's going to be better even the stretch that he's had is better than some of these players who are ahead of him. Instantly.
So it is probably just, you know, the long-term value for pitchers. There's so much more uncertainty about it than there is for hitters.
And for relief pitchers, then you just... This is what we were talking about earlier with Brandon Garcia. He's a random reliever, so he's number 13. Jacob Mizrowski is a starting pitcher. Even if he ends up being a reliever, he will be a dominant closer, not just a arm.
Someone must have seen something with Brandon Garcia. I don't know. I only know that his name is spelled with a Y. That's all I know.
I know that his name is spelled with a Y, and I will defend his honor to the death. to keep that Josh Naylor trade at a B+ and no further.
B-. Speaking of hopefully dominant pitching prospects, the Mariners signed number 3 overall pick Cade Anderson, who told reporters...
Very different type of stuff than Mizrowski, but yes.
In Seattle last week. I was in the pool the other day right before I got to Seattle, and Cal Raleigh reached out, which right now is probably the coolest guy in the league to get a text from.
There we go.
So there's your face of MLB. Anderson will spend the summer in Peoria working with performance staff before returning to the mound for training camp next spring. Training camp, spring training, next spring. Roundup time?
Can't wait.
The Kraken avoided arbitration with winger Kaapo Kakko, agreeing to a 3-year deal with an average value of $4.525 million ahead of his scheduled hearing on Friday. Kakko was acquired from the Rangers in December and produced 10 goals and 20 assists in 49 games with the team ranking 4th on the Kraken overall, tops among wingers in points per game. Turned 24 in February, so good to get him on a long-term deal. The 2025-26 NHL schedule announced the Kraken will open Thursday, August 9th against Anaheim, also host the Vegas Golden Knights during the opening weekend before embarking on an early 6-game road trip. They'll wrap up with a back-to-back at Vegas and Colorado on April 15th, 16th. NHL is breaking for the Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina next February. Seattle Sounders, you know, understands that soccer needs to be more fun and goals are fun, so let's have more of those. Seattle Sounders, risking surrendering a 3-goal lead the previous weekend at Sporting in Kansas City, the Sounders managed to pull it off at home last Wednesday against Colorado. Albert Rushnak's second goal of the match gave the Sounders a 3-0 lead just after halftime, with the aforementioned Obed Vargas netting the opener in the 16th minute. However, shambolic defending saw the Sounders concede 2 penalties in a 4-minute span converted by 2 different Rapids players. Didn't quite totally understand why that happened. Then substitute Darren Yappe equalized in the 75th minute just after coming on. Sounders outdone in that draw in terms of XG, 2.7 to 2.3. Saturday completing the 3-match week. Bad news early on is Jordan Morris left in the 16th minute against San Jose after a shoulder injury that resulted in AC joint separation and will require surgery. The hope is it won't end his season, possibly an 8-week timetable on the low end for Morris after he underwent surgery earlier this week. But Danny Masovsky came on and scored twice as the Sounders rallied from an early deficit to take the lead in the 54th minute. Earthquakes equalized in the 64th, but Pedro de la Vega provided the winner in the 69th minute in a match where both teams had 2.4 XG with a combined 40 shots, 16 of them on target.
There we go.
Soccer is more fun when there's no defense at all. Some other unfortunate injury news. Paul Rothrock suffered a broken hand in training this week, underwent surgery, will miss this weekend's game in Atlanta with his status to be determined beyond that, depending on pain, but it sounds like he might be back for the League's Cup. And then some good health news. When Joao Paulo went under the knife, turned out he did not tear his ACL and needed only a meniscus cleanup, potentially allowing him to return this season. Brian Schmetzer told reporters the timetable for Joao Paulo's return is likely 6 to 8 weeks. Sounders now 4th in the West standings, but still 5th in points per match, entering their final MLS match before League's Cup this weekend in Atlanta. The United are a good reminder for spoiled Sounders fans that massive MLS success and a big fan base last decade hasn't always carried over. Atlanta 13th in the East with just 4 wins all season, all of those coming at home.
Is this where you can complain about the Women's Euro?
Let's do it after the Seattle Rain update.
Okay, fair enough.
The Rain beat Japanese side Red Diamonds 2-1 in a friendly last weekend. The big stories were the reign debut of Mia Fischel and the return of Sofia Huerta, who had been on loan with Olympic Lyonnais. Huerta scored the opener in the 27th minute. The Red Diamonds equalized before halftime, but Jordan Heinema drew a penalty in the 53rd, and Huerta converted it from the spot for her second in the game winner. Fischel played 30 minutes as she builds up to match fitness. Reign will continue training the rest of July before resuming their NWSL schedule late next week, as they get back to play at the conclusion of the Women's Euros, a final that sadly will not include Italy after their loss.
For just us.
Yeah.
Were you watching?
No. There's no way to stream these matches that are on Fox. It is extremely frustrating. And there's no way to legally stream.
Have you seen the highlights?
No, I'm not sure I have. I understand that they conceded very in the 6 minute of stoppage time in the second half.
I literally was not watching at this point. So you can imagine the investment that I have in this match.
I was the one that alerted you.
Extreme for the extra time.
Extra time.
Yeah, I guess extra time. Yeah, for the extra time, which was the first time that I have ever watched the Italian women's soccer team. However, my investment was massive. So they conceded a goal in the 96th minute, right?
Yep.
I didn't see any of this, of course, but I assume that the whistle should have been blown.
Pretty much the entire game.
They led 1-0 from early on. I assume the whistle should have been blown before then. There's no way you should ever get to 96 minutes in a match.
That's like on the low side now. The average is like 10 minutes.
Just fucking stop play then. Like, if you're going to do this, come on.
Barbara Bonansea gave the Italian team the lead in the, I believe, the 33rd minute.
But then in extra time with like 3 minutes left on the clock, 2 minutes left on the clock to call a penalty in that situation. Somebody needs to be mauled, right? It has to be a situation because you're ending the game, right? What you're doing is you are saying we are giving this team, you know, I don't know how many penalties are converted, but it's an extraordinarily high number, right? It has be something like
this one wasn't converted. Technically speaking, was it?
But it has to be something like 80% plus of penalties are converted, right?
Yeah, it's something in that range.
For the refs to have done that, I don't know what the VAR situation is in the Women's Euro. I assume that there is some. Yeah. But to not even go and take another further look at it, maybe they do it instantly. Like, maybe it was a foul, but it wasn't the type of foul. To me, it has to be the type of play that you're going out, you are stopping a goal from happening, right? Somebody is making a defensive play where it's like, we are going to concede here, and you're stopping a goal. It has to be egregious. Not a 50-50 at any point of the match, right? And so the defender like knocked down the British player a little bit, but it was like, it could have been incidental. It could have been pulled down. You know, they didn't even show a good replay because obviously every network is biased against the Italian soccer teams.
Of course. And
we know this. We know this to be true. We know who runs the media over here, Big Britain. but it was a situation where the offensive player sort of could have pulled the defender onto them if we didn't see a good replay. And either way, it's like 50-50. To call it in that situation, you have to be goddamn sure that it's a penalty. And Italy stops the goal, and then they score on the ricochet after. And it was like, I was so excited. So just because I could feel the British hopes getting up. And when we stopped that goal, it was like, oh, crushing to the British hopes. And then they scored after. I was explaining to all the children gathered around to watch. We had our little Italian flag with us. And I was explaining to them like the tension of soccer. And they were like, there should be more goals scored. And I'm like, this is part of what makes it fun, though, is this like extreme buildup to extreme relief or just letdown. Right?
Did
like
you tell them about the Sounders, though?
About how they just score all the time.
Yeah.
No, the Sounders did not come up. Not interested. Not interested at all. But I was like, this is why it is fun to watch these matches, because it's just like the swings of emotion and the tension that happens to that release. But
yes.
I personally felt like that is not the type of situation that you call that penalty in. Handing. I understand, like, they've never won a men's Euro, so they feel like they have to cheat on the women's side and they're defending champions. I get it. But to me, this was too far. Anyway, I'm pretty sure France advanced on penalty kicks on the other side of the bracket. So
no, did not go to penalties. and France did not advance.
Was it Germany?
Spain is the other team in the final. It's a rematch.
That was the,
it was
France Germany were playing for the right to play Spain.
Correct.
Okay, and Spain beat France.
Yes.
Viva España.
Yeah. Well, we'll hope that it goes the same as the 2023 World Cup final, except for the post-match trophy presentation. Hopefully will go very differently with the changes in the Spanish Federation. All right, Seattle Storm. Our mood has changed dramatically as opposed to had we record this yesterday when the Storm were coming off another ugly loss to a below 500 team in the return from their break, getting beat by 22.
We saw some sad Storm fans on the train.
Oh, really?
On the way back. It was Tuesday
night,
right?
Going back from the Mariners game?
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea that people were coming back from the Storm. I didn't even know there was a Storm game because nobody alerted me to the fact that there was a Storm game, but...
It's too bad they don't publish schedules of these things. against the Dallas Wings, again, they played without Skylar Diggins, who was a late scratch for personal reasons. They went 4 of 21 on threes. Dallas went 10 of 23. And that dropped the Storm to 3-3 over their past six games, with all three losses to below 500 teams. But we have never been so back as the Storm are after taking on a Chicago Sky team that was without both all-star Angel Reese and
are we back?
Starting guard Ariel Atkins on Thursday. But never mind that. The Storm won this one 95-57, getting a dominant performance from Dominique Malunga in 17 minutes off the bench. Career highs with 14 points and 10 rebounds. Her first career double-double. The youngest player in WNBA history to record a double-double. A dramatic change from Tuesday night when Malunga missed all six of her shot attempts in 13 minutes of action. But and then Lexi Brown going 5 of 5 from the field, her season high since joining the Storm. Really great to see her play so well, give the Storm some depth. Alicia Clark scored for the first time since July 9th, which was nice to see after an extended period that obviously did include the All-Star break. So, yeah, a very different start to this road trip where the Storm, who have been shaky to say the least against below 500 teams, play three of them on this road trip. Saturday, they're in Washington, a rematch against the Mystics, who beat them before the All-Star break, then wrap up Monday in Connecticut against a Sun team that beat them the last time they were at Mohegan Sun and Agreed Arena, and an opportunity for the Storm to solidify their hold on fourth in the standings. Another thing that's changed, when I wrote this suddenly in the rearview mirror, the Las Vegas Aces, who at that point had won three in a row with Asia Wilson back playing at MVP level, but they then lost at Indiana on Thursday night. So everything feeling different for the Storm two nights later than it did. Actually, there is one thing that's not feeling different.
I got
some bad news. The Los Angeles Sparks all of a sudden might be good.
Oh, no.
They've won four in a row. They are the WNBA's hottest team, have won six of their last 10, and have now climbed within a game and a half of the eighth and final playoff
spot. We'll see. You never judge it when they're up. You never judge it when they're up or when they're down.
You don't, but they're also getting Cameron Brink at some back at some point soon.
It's going to take a second to knock off Sabras there. It's been a long time since she's played.
And they do have to jump both the Golden State Valkyries and the Washington Mystics to get back up into eighth. But still, with the Aces playing better, with the Sparks run, the idea of the Storm with two lottery picks and a very good chance at number one taking a bit of a hit right now.
I solely care about Malunga. That's it at this point for this
Malunga
season.
Is the timeline.
Right? I mean, it's true. Like, that is a dominating performance against this guy. And it's like, that's why you fucking play her. That's why you get her the minutes. To have lost as badly. I mean, honestly, the minutes that she played in a game that they won by almost 40 is not enough.
Well, she did spend some time on the bench in foul trouble in the second half. I'm not sure how many she actually had.
But also for a game, like, I don't care about the 0 for 6 in this one. Everybody shot bad. Like, she shot 0 for 6, but Erica Wheeler was 2 for 11.
She had 5 fouls.
And Tiffany Mitchell was 1 for 6. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I wasn't going to point out that Wheeler had come back to earth, had shot 28%, including 23% over the last six games coming into Thursday. But then Erica Wheeler also bounced back with 13 points on 5 of 10 shooting, her best game in a long time.
When you're losing to the Wings by 24 points, you don't play Dominique Malunga only 13 minutes.
I agree that she should have played more. I mean, it's weird because they were leading at halftime of that game. They just completely got destroyed in the second half. Wheeler did also get a chance to participate in All-Star festivities. She was in the skills competition back in Indiana, where she was an All-Star and she was All-Star MVP playing for the Fever in 2019 and played as recently as last season. They got a lot of love for the crowd, finished second to Natasha Cloud in the skills challenge. Are you to men's basketball note? Are you ready for the Acrisure Holiday
Hello.
Classic schedule? Huskies will face Nevada on Thanksgiving Day
And
to
Nevada.
open the Acrisure Holiday Classic. The 14 field also includes Colorado and the University of San Francisco. The Wolfpack, coached by Steve Alford, beat the Huskies 63-53 last year in Reno. So perhaps a chance for a little UW-Nevada rivalry if they're playing each other twice in as many years. UW football news.
Is Steve Alford? Never mind. Okay.
Is Steve Alford what?
Nothing.
Okay.
Never mind. Never mind. I
Jim
thought there was
Fish.
an NC State thing with Steve Alford. Am I wrong with that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Like when they had their opening last year?
No, I thought maybe he'd coach them at some point. I was like, wow, he's all Wolfpack all the time. But I'm totally wrong with that. So
Nope.
am I thinking? I'm thinking of a different person.
He
Am I correct?
coached, did he coach? He didn't coach Northern Iowa. He coached somewhere in the state of Iowa, I'm confident. Then he coached New Mexico and then UCLA.
And of course, Manchester.
What Manchester?
The private liberal arts university associated with the Church of the Brethren in two locations in a residential campus in North Manchester, Indiana, and a second location in Fort Wayne, Indiana, of course.
Sure.
In
Where did he coach in Iowa? Am I remembering that correctly? It's his first job?
Iowa, he coached at
Iowa.
Iowa.
Oh, okay. But he didn't, did he leave Iowa for New Mexico?
He might have been fired. I don't know. He coached there for like 8 years.
Yeah, okay. That was his first job, Iowa? Like his first D1 job?
We're not counting Southwest Missouri State.
No, that is Division I school. Yeah.
That's actual Missouri State. It was just called Southwest Missouri State at the time.
Correct.
Yeah.
That would have been Jackie Stiles era. All right,
Jackie
football.
Childs? She played at Missouri State.
Yeah. UW football, Jed Fish appeared at Big Ten Media Day on Wednesday. The big news, unfortunately, was that edge Russell Davis II is out for the season
I
after
didn't know
suffering a
this news
patella
until this
injury in
podcast, and
the
I'm
kneecap.
devastated by
It's a huge bummer. It's been a star-crossed
it.
UW tenure for Davis, who transferred from Arizona following Fish, played just three games last season, highlighted by three sacks and a breakout performance in the win over UCLA that assured the Huskies bowl eligibility before suffering a season-ending triceps injury that had sidelined him through spring practice this year.
So I think the UW defense is maybe a little bit underrated, right? It's like Ephesians and Dakario, right? Like those are corners. Dakario Davis is one that I feel like we've maybe forgotten about. Like Jacob Manu, there's some pieces in there. Budo Alokta is like NCAA football thinks they are all in on him,
Really?
who came over from Wazoo. So there are some pieces, but I do kind of think UW's bringing a little bit of Pac-12 to the Big Ten, especially with line play. It's one of those things where it's like, you all do things one way, we do things another way over here in
I
the
mean,
Pac-12.
they're trying to get there. It's going to take some time.
But the way that like the receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, secondary on lock, the line play and the
There's still some
losing Russell
questions about the
Davis.
receivers element.
There's no questions about Denzel Boston, first round pick Denzel Boston.
I would agree there is not. Omari Evans, we didn't get a chance to see in spring practice. We'll see if he, solidifies that spot
Oh, Omari
opposite
Evans
him.
is going to be awesome. Also, don't you dare talk about my dog, Decker DeGraff.
I would never.
Okay.
I'm a huge Decker DeGraff
You watch your back.
guy.
NCAA
Well.
football franchise, after the first year, the portal's way better. We went to the playoff in year one. Year two, I signed Dante Moore in the portal because I was just like,
Wow.
any Oregon player who wants to come here is welcome. The door is open.
I thought you thought Dante Moore wasn't any good.
No, I was just like, literally, if you want that, we also signed their tight end too. Kenyon Sadiq is his name. And it was like, you want to come? The door, it is a wide open door. Anybody who is there. Game number one, DeMond is injured for the season. And I
No.
was like, well, it's Dante Moore's team now. play the whole season. Don't make the playoff. Played in the oh my god, the Duke's Mayo Bowl against Wake Forest. It. I was in a situation
is that a
where
bowl that UW can play in now? Is that a Big Ten?
I think so. No, I actually was kind of like, this actually could be kind of fun.
Wait, are we still in Pac-12 bowls this year? I don't know how that works anymore.
It might have just been an NCAA football thing where it's just like they put you in whatever, but it was the Duke's Mayo Bowl against Wake Forest, crushed them. I was in a situation where if I would have won the last game of the year, the schedule's all funky, so it's Penn State, and I lost to Penn State, and they went to the playoff, and I didn't, and I went to the Duke's Mayo Bowl. No indication that he's going to transfer at all. The second that the offseason happens, Damon Williams transfers, like no chance of persuading him. Signs with Oklahoma, and I'm like, because of playing time. And I was like, I couldn't have played you. You were hurt for the season, Damon. Signs with Oklahoma and is the top-rated quarterback in the country.
That sounds about right.
So?
Is that like his natural progression?
I think he has, like, they have dev traits for him. I didn't even look at what it was, but he probably has elite dev trait, Damon. So it's good to know that NCAA football is aware of Damon Williams. Like, they weren't willing to go as far as being like, he's amazing right now, but they were willing to go as far as his potential is massive.
All right, so I'm on the Division I 2025 Division I FBS football season Wikipedia. All sorts of tie-ins here. Number one, do you know one of the two schools that is new to FBS, the FBS level in 2025?
Well, Kennesaw State.
No,
Kennesaw State was last year. Is that right?
I just said it's a tie-in.
A tie-in. To what?
Missouri State.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, they're new too.
Okay.
And speaking of Oregon tight ends, in an effort to reduce feigned injuries, if medical personnel have to enter the field to tend to an injured player after the ball is spotted by officials ready for play, that team will be charged a timeout or a 5-yard delay of game if out of timeouts.
So is the medical personnel, could they still fake an injury and get the clock to stop?
Yes.
Like, what if you fake an injury to get the clock to stop and then you get up and you're fine?
But you'd be charged a timeout. So
okay. And if you don't have a timeout, but sometimes isn't the clock, the 5 yards, the clock should have to
10-second runoff applies if the team is out of timeouts after the 2-minute timeout.
There we go. They're coming for you. You know what you've done.
I mean, not that they were the first.
Not the only. Other people have certainly done this, but they're the most flagrant. I like that. I like that work. Cause that's what the NFL has been, right?
Yeah. It took much longer than it needed to. Seattle Seahawks training camp opened Wednesday with all Seahawks accounted for. Nick Emmanuel agreed to the fully guaranteed contract we expected him to get on Thursday.
I said, John, get it done. You know you're going to.
And
he did.
Listen to the pod. Got it done by my ESPN colleague, Adam Schefter, followed by Elijah Arroyo on Friday to a deal that is fully guaranteed for the first 3 years with $101,000 guaranteed in year four per over the cap. I'm not sure how they landed on $101,000. Not 100. Not 105. $101,000. Doesn't
the
add
agent
up to
was like,
we
need it to be
either.
More than 100,000 guaranteed in year four. And John was like, got you.
Bet. After signing Arroyo, the Seahawks waived starting tight end Noah Fant on Sunday, a move that saves $8.9 million against the cap that leaves A.J. Barner and veteran free agent Eric Saubert as the other tight ends besides undrafted rookies and, of course, Arroyo. So, yeah. You sign one day, Elijah Arroyo, you have a pretty good shot at the starting job 2 days later.
I mean, where they drafted Elijah Arroyo, he had a pretty good shot at the starting job. But this is also a little bit of a vote of confidence in my boy, AJ Burner.
Without question. I mean, he's the most complete of these tight ends. You know, Salvard is basically just a blocking back and some a blocking tight end and someone with experience. Brady Russell also in the mix at tight end, in addition to playing fullback. He's been at both spots, apparently.
Are you saying Eric Salvard's like a little too cold and Elijah Arroyo's a little too hot and AJ Burner's just right?
You know, his name is Burner, not Burner.
AJ Burner.
Okay. I don't know that I would describe him as AJ Burner, but he had a fine rookie season.
He's a dog. You know I love him. He will be AJ Burner forever.
Okay. I didn't know this was a thing.
Oh yeah, no, this is just my nickname for him.
I love to create my own nicknames that no one else gets or thinks. I mean, yeah, he had a very nice rookie season. Not,
Oh, I freaking love him.
yeah, four touchdowns.
So
there you go. Yeah, no fan. I mean, it's one of those things where everyone's like, "Wow, they saved so much money by releasing him." It's like, yeah, but then they just paid him that much more for one season of football. I feel like I'm the only one that thinks this. Mike McDonald told
you
reporters
are
that.
John Schneider has entered the territory very wrongly. Has entered the ter That's what I'm telling you. It's all marketing. Branding is the most important thing that matters. When people are like, this is the most neutral Mariners podcast, it's all just branding. Actually, I know it's kind of ironic because we have literally a Mariners hot take segment, but
Exactly.
you with your B pluses, everybody just thinks you're neutral on all things.
You said I'm not neutral on John Schneider.
Probably shouldn't be neutral on John Schneider. He's pretty terrible at this.
Mike McDonald told reporters that Uchenna Nwosu is, quote, not necessarily close to returning following off-season knee surgery. Said it will be at least all of training camp and up to the start of the regular season. I mean, this is like they played basically all of last season without Nwosu. I think anything he gives you is a bonus at this point, is how I'd put it. Dynamite drop in money.
I mean, what
Devin Witherspoon.
the amount that I want to think about Seahawks football is I can't even describe to you an amount low. I'm 1 week from today going to training camp because it's classic American summer. But
You'd rather think about Wild Waves.
oh, I'm way more into Wild Waves right now than I am into Seahawks football.
Devin Witherspoon joined Leonard Williams and Julian Love as the third Seahawks defender in the top 10 in ESPN's position rankings, ranking number 10 at cornerback. Reek Woolen also received votes, as did Jaxon Smith-Njigba at wide receiver, where he was not, in fact, ranked in the top 10 or anywhere close. Another thing you don't want to think about.
I just don't care. How about that? I don't care that I said it, that I thought that. I don't care that he wasn't in it. I don't care about any of this.
Well, I do want to think about Seahawks football in the glory days. And you know why that is?
Hello.
Because I have a package I have not yet opened here, sitting next to me, delivered to the Pelton cast.
Hello. Is
And
this an advanced copy?
that is an advanced copy of Third Pelton brother Mike Sean Dugar's book on the Seahawks in the Legion of Boom era. So I can't wait to
We
crack
are
this
the
one open.
listener demands a book report.
Well, I hope what the listener demands is having Mike Sean on the pod to talk about it in the next couple of weeks here. But that's the franchise Seattle Seahawks, a curated history of the Legion of Boom era that Mike Sean's been giving us updates before he's come on for a long period of time. So really excited. Doug Baldwin Jr. did the foreword for this one.
Heard of him.
So yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, big fan. Rent and Zone.
Great stuff. When are you going to read that?
It actually
Did you
might be
say
a
Renton's own Doug Baldwin?
Yeah, you don't think he is?
I mean, I kind of, he's not from there.
No, but no one, very few people are repping Renton harder than Doug Baldwin Jr.
I
I would
would agree
include
with
you
that.
in that list.
No.
You're repping Boulevard Park pretty hard.
That's what I rep, because that's where I'm from.
I actually did get a book from the library that's got a lot of holds on it today, so I probably have to get through that first before I can read Mike Sean's book. But
What book?
it is Christian Kish's memoir for my top chef heads out there.
Got it. Okay. You were like, that king ain't gonna return himself. JRR. I got you, Frodo. I gotta get through this first, see what happens. You're going down, Sauron.
I've been
Beautiful.
watching Luke Rednour and not long enough that I remember that when he got all sorts of Frodo jokes.
Oh, from B looking like Frodo?
Yeah. All right, on that note,
Thanks for listening.
go buy Mike's book.
There's no post-pod today talk this week because it was lost to the sands of time.
We can only do it once. You'd
I'll
not get it here.
give you my update on things that I've done. I'll tell you this, things that I've done in my classic American summer as an act of defiance. I'll do this again. Season passes to Wild Waves. This all in the past week. Random Mariners game, just up and decided to go. The
I
most
know.
fun thing that you could do. To me, that is like childhood memories, like just randomly being like, do you want to go to the Mariners game today? I'm like, that was the most fun thing ever.
It's a much harder decision because it used to be like a 15-minute drive. tops, and you could park so close to the kingdom.
Now with light rail,
that's true.
It's not
still
that
a long
big a
drive.
It is a longer drive. Tickets to the Savannah Bananas in September. Won the lottery. Got tickets to the Savannah Bananas.
Multiple. How did you enter this lottery? Tell me more.
I put in my email months ago.
But that's the only way you can buy tickets because they're that popular. They're playing at T-Mobile, and so 50,000 seats.
They're completely sold out instantly. Oh. Two nights. Are you surprised by this?
I'm surprised that it's lottery worthy. I mean, even Taylor Swift wasn't.
Dan Wilson would be chagrined about some of the stuff that they do. Let me just tell you, I know that you don't like baseball. People are having fun out there.
It's not what I said. Dan Wilson in opposition to the Savannah Bananas.
I think there was some minor league game where they had no announcer or anything like that. Did you see this? It was like no sound, no announcer, nothing, just ball. Right?
Oh, really?
That's what you're looking for. This is a different end of the spectrum. Dan was like, that sounds great. People should be paying a little bit more attention to
the
manager.
The great thing about Josh Naylor, for the record, is that he is known to celebrate. So
is he known to celebrate? Also, by the way, a proud Canadian.
We did not bring that up. You know,
from
he's
down
have
south,
to come, you know,
as
back north.
The Hidden Cameras would say, an obscure indie rock band from the early 2000s. Mississauga, goddamn. That's a reference for myself.
Once on this podcast discussed a presumably apocryphal discussion on the Raptors broadcast that instead of saying Mississippi, that when you were counting in playing football in the schoolyard in Canada, the kids in Canada said Mississauga.
Did they
Apparently
actually
that
do
is
that?
Not
no, we
true.
We don't
find
know that.
No evidence to corroborate it.
they got it out of us. We did the post-pod talk anyway. multiple baseball, children's baseball everywhere. BMX. We are having, I told you I went to the Holiday Inn on the river by IHG. I might even fuck around and go to a hydroplane event.
Blue Angels.
I'm in on. I complained before about people complaining about the Blue Angels.
I'm not going to get to enough Seafair this weekend. Now, thankfully, I have presumably.
That's not this weekend, is it?
It is. No, this is. Oh, this we is didn't do waterfall. The Waterfallies preview.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Do it on the fly.
All right, I got to look up.
Do a Waterfallies? I thought we mostly only did Seafair preview.
Yeah, maybe it's more of a Waterfallies recap, but we should at least mention that Waterfallies is happening.
I actually thought we ended up with a baseball tournament this weekend down in the Dust Bowl, but it's not even there. It's at a different place in Federway. We're not even playing in the Dust Bowl.
Got only 7 votes. That's very disappointing. It's the APBA Gold Cup this year in the Tri-Cities. Yeah, that's
we went
that's
to
not a lot about.
The team that we're playing for are called the Swamp Donkeys. this random tournament at the end of the season.
Uh-huh.
And it's a Cooperstown team, and we're not going to Cooperstown. And they were having a meeting about Cooperstown logistics. And the entire time I thought to myself, thank fucking God we are not going to Cooperstown. I was just over there. We're like messing around, eating pizza, throwing stuff at each other. And everybody's talking at logistics. And I was just like, this sounds terrible.
Oh, I assume it's because you didn't want to be there and to see Ichiro there.
No. That has nothing to do with it. But also, I think the whole thing is a scam. And I don't love the idea. It's like, I still have, like, I almost did this at, like, there's a record label in, called Kill Rock Stars, right? There's like a Kill Your Idols sort of thing where it's like celebrating the history of baseball still feels a little gross to me because of, you know, the history of baseball.
I mean,
if you think too hard about it.
No, I will say there are two histories of baseball, and I hopefully the
I do agree. They I think they've
now.
Probably tried to do a better job of talking about both and talking at the Negro Leagues, etc. But like, still, there's still a little bit of a glorification of the history of baseball, which is pretty questionable or terrible. But anyway, I was so happy that we weren't going. But
not
then
part of your suburb of Americana.
No, a little bit, a little hint. Now, I mean, honestly, going to Cooperstown would have been a classic American summer thing to have done. But I didn't work today, and I just went to Wild Waves.
That sounds great.
Is that incredible?
Yeah. I drove past Wild Waves.
I sort of did work. I had the like phone in the little pouch. I was like, wow, I'm doing all the Jan stuff. I had my phone in the plastic pouch and you're just waiting in lines for so long. Like I could have easily just worked it, which I did, waiting in lines, but there's all sorts of new like water features and things. It's kind of a like very different park.
Do they still have the classic burlap sack?
I don't think they do. No, I think it's gone. Wow. I don't remember they had that much when we were kids though. They put it in later.
I don't know. I remember going there in the 90s.
My disposition is just like, I'm not capable of doing the scrambler anymore.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Kind of a sad thing. Yeah. Like
I'm confident. I don't know when this will be put to the test or in what scenario it'd be put to the test, but I'm confident I can handle the scrambler.
You're confident. Also,
broken thumb at all.
Last week, everybody went on the Ferris wheel. And I was just like, first off, Ferris wheels are horseshit. Like it's one of the, sorry, Sufjan. It's one of the worst inventions in our country.
I think you can think of a lot worse inventions, but
yeah, no, I'm not a Ferris wheel guy. But it's just like literally the entire time, it's just loading. That's it.
Yes. We were talking about the Great Wheel.
It would be like if they made air travel out of like loading in and loading out of the airplane.
If the plane itself took 15 minutes and it was longer to give aboard.
That is it.
I my concern with going on the Great Wheel is not like being scared of heights necessarily, because you're enclosed.
There's literally nothing scary. First off, are you admitting to a fear of the Great Wheel? Is that what's called?
I've declined to go in the past. It's more being trapped on there for that long of a period of time while they're loading everyone.
At least that one you can like look out over something interesting, not
true. The theme park.
No, I mean, if you were even looking, they have the Ferris wheel in a crazy like hidden away area. Like it is kind of like when you're waiting on the water slides, you could see out of the whole park, and it's kind of fun to look at stuff.
Right.
And then also I-5. Beautiful I-5.
If you had been there yesterday at the right time, you could have seen me driving by on my way to Renton.
But the Ferris wheel is in just like, there's nothing to see. There's like a jumping kangaroos ride or whatever. Anyway, I have no interest in going to the rides area at all, but Marco is really interested in it. And he went on one of them that spins and goes up, and it spins around really fast and goes up and down side to side. And he just went on his own. And I was like, dog, whatever you want to do on your own, have fun.
No. Okay. Any other reports from Wild Waves?
There's all sorts of new water slides.
Was Kendall Gill traded while we were there again? That was just Josh acquiring Taylor. Kendall Gill, for the record, not trading him away. That happened while we were obviously happened while we were at Cannon Beach.
Yes. Everybody remembers. But we went to a Walla Walla Little League Field. Did I tell you about this before?
Only in the original version of the post pod.
We talked about it there. There is something about summer in Eastern Washington that just feels so good. So we did that. Like, honestly, it was my favorite weekend in the summer, probably because I didn't have to do any children's baseball. Playing children's baseball at the Walla Walla Little League Field. And we went this weekend to Kent Little League's field at Ryan Brunner Park after being at Phil Johnson ball fields in Everett to go hit more after that. I'll say we did that Saturday. We moved from 54-foot bases to 50-foot bases. And so, like, the timing got off in that week because this was back to 12-year rules. On Saturday, and then the first at bat on Sunday, Luca cranked a homer like 275 feet to dead center.
I saw it on Instagram. It was quite impressive.
He said he took it to the Amazon
parking lot. Yeah. I did not attend any games, but we drove past the stadium and saw the Port Angeles Lefties warming up.
The Port Angeles Lefties?
Yeah, they play in the...
They've got like a fish sticks type team over there?
They're more serious. They play in the whatever the Pacific.
Oh, so you probably love that.
They are college players. Like,
who play in Port Angeles. There's a team like that in Wenatchee too.
I don't know for sure if it's the same league. This is the league that Rob Nyer is the commissioner of. The
really?
West Coast League.
That's the other thing that I need to do for my classic American summer is we wanted to
The Wenatchee Apple Sox is or in that team.
Yeah, no, they're good. The Apple Sox
is or the Walla Walla Sweets and the Yakima Valley Pippins. That is quite a name.
Yeah, they're horseshit. The Pippins.
Wow.
The
Nanaimo Night Owls, like, could have caught them in the Victoria Harbor Cats while I was across the border.
Josh Naylor came up for the Mississauga Mud Dogs. David proposed doing Around the Horn, though, for ballparks. So it's a Mariners game, a Rainiers game, an Aqua Sox game, and a Fish Sticks game.
Love it.
I've already done one. No, not in the same week. Honestly, the one that interests me the least is the Rainiers for some reason, because I'm like, I've done that. Aqua Sox, we were there on Saturday. We were there in Everett. And so, like, you have an hour after dropping people off. So I just drove to Funko Field.
It's right
in
there.
That hour. And it's not that close. It's like, it's right there because Everett's not that big, but it's like a 15-minute drive.
It's right there. Like, it's next to a major street. I mean, I guess, you know, it's next to the main. The
Phil Johnson ball fields is the thing that isn't right there.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But that night, Sanger was starting. It was a Julio bobblehead game. Oh. And the tickets are like $12 or whatever. And I was like, if I wasn't in Everett right now at 9 a.m. and had no interest in driving back to Everett at like 6 p.m., it would have been a very fun day to have gone. They should make Everett closer to South Seattle.
So among the things you did not hear in our original post-pod discussion, the next edition of ESPN the magazine, and you not correctly guessing that my close personal friend Alex Rodriguez was one of the players featured on the next cover. So there you go. All right, on that note.
I love the comment on the Peltoncast Discord. I don't like sports, man. I'm like, yeah, that's what we're going to circle all the way around to on the Peltoncast Discord. Just like, not really an interest in sports. Also complaining about 20 is plenty signs.
The Peltoncast endorses safe driving.
and them changing the seventh inning song to back to a weird dance version of Louie Louie from a group from.
Wait, I thought we didn't support that.
No, we don't support that.
Okay. But I said we do support safe driving.
Maybe you do. 20 is plenty. 25 is a safe. Like, the speed limit is set for a reason. It's not like.
Well, they reduced the speed limit.
Did they?
Yes. That's what the 20 is plenty is for. Within the city of Seattle proper, streets that were previously 25 are now 20.
I thought it was 25, and people put out signs where they were like, hey, bud, I know the speed limit's 25, but 20 is plenty, fella.
No, the 20 is plenty was to support the change that was made.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
It may have been advocating for it, but...
I thought it was a condescending, like, whoa there, big guy. Slow down.
I mean, I still think it can be that, but it can also have the force of law behind it as well.
Fair enough.
There definitely was a slower driving ad on the Storm game when I was watching on Amazon Prime earlier. So this is a continued push. And the Peltoncast.
There's literally two countries that are happening right now.
The Peltoncast endorses it.
That's fine. That is fine. There are two radically different countries that are happening within the same country.
It might be more than that. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.